This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
This is Marketplace Money from APM, American Public Media. I'm Tess Viglin.
It's Marketplace Tech Report from APM, American Public Media. I'm John Moe.
Hi, welcome to the Remarket Podcast for the last week in April. I'm John Haas, an editor here at Marketplace. And seriously, a third of the year has already gone by? See, that's the problem. Time just flies. I know it's cliche, but it's true. In fact, we'll talk about cliches a little bit today on the podcast. But why do you choose to spend some of that time listening to Marketplace each week? I started listening back in 1996, long before I worked here, because Marketplace made me care about economic and business news. The show surprised me. It made me laugh. It was cool. So for the next 10 minutes or so, I'm going to explain exactly why I think Marketplace is still so much fun to listen to. To start, I think the first thing we think about is our audience. It's not just enough for us to ask big questions or find good scenes. Marketplace reporters need to figure out what you, the audience, wants to know or needs to know. And then we got to deliver that info in a casual manner. We're not reporting the news at you. We're talking to you. We're telling you stories. So here, just listen to this story from Stacey Vanek Smith. It's about a toilet paper company marketing a brand new product.
Okay, I'm just going to get this over with. Cottonelle Fresh Care is basically a baby wipe for adults. Consumer products giant Kimberly-Clark is trying to get customers to use these wet wipes in tandem with regular toilet paper. Kind of a 1-2 approach. This isn't easy to advertise.
I say this and this is called Southern hospitality.
I call it the clean getaway.
It is kind of an awkward subject, so it does...
William Ward is a social media professor at Syracuse University. He says to handle the ick factor, Cottonelle is holding a contest on Facebook to give a name to the routine. So far, suggestions range from the tushies to the two-handed tango. Ward says the contest is a smart move.
If somebody has a silly name that they come up for it and then they share it to those friends, now you've just reached a new audience.
Wet wipes account for about 3% of toilet paper sales in the U.S. And if Cottonelle can get people to double up on their TP purchases, it could do wonders for its bottom line. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
It's hard to be funny, but Stacey knows how to talk to people, and I think she just approaches topics with the right amount of humor and, in this case, tact. That's always the case with our man in London, Stephen Beard. That guy's awesome. Whenever I fill in as the foreign editor, I always look forward to my phone conversations with him. He's got that perfect British wit where he carefully chooses his words, but you still know exactly what he really means. I'm going to play just the beginning of this Marketplace Morning Report piece. You'll hear what I mean.
Nothing much happens in Dull. It's a small hamlet. Some 80 people live there, quietly. Until, that is, one local resident went on a cycling tour of Oregon and made an exciting discovery. She came across the town of Boring. Her pulse quickened. She hit on the idea of twinning the two, bringing Dull and Boring together.
Okay, now we go from Sir Stephen Beard, not yet knighted, to Sir Richard Branson, the chairman of the Virgin Group, talk with Jeremy Hobson on Thursday morning. Of course, Richard Branson has dipped his toes into just about every business venture you can imagine, so it's no surprise that he tackled British railroads.
How do you make money with trains, and are you willing to come over to the U.S. and try to do a private network here?
If invited, we'd love to come to the U.S. and see if we can help. And we have looked at Los Angeles to Vegas and Miami to the Keys and one or two other places. But basically, the way we, I think, transformed a chunk of Britain's rail network was we took over a rundown piece of rail and we've doubled the number of passengers in the last 6 years. So if you offer people a decent service, if you give them internet access, and if you have a smiling, cheerful staff, and if you can travel really quickly, then you can make a success out of the rail business.
So I guess I shouldn't ask you what you think of Amtrak.
I think it's got a little way to go.
Let me ask you, you started from very little, a mail order record business back in the 70s. You're now a billionaire. Do you think it's harder these days to achieve that kind of success?
I don't think it's harder to achieve success today than it was when we started. You know, if you have an idea that's going to make a big difference to other people's lives and other people are not doing it, just say, screw it, just do it and get on with it and give it a go. And even if you fall flat in your face, you'll learn so much from it and have a lot of fun, and then you can pick yourself up and try again. But especially with the internet, there's just so many opportunities out there today.
Do you ever get bored with everyday life after all the thrills that you've had?
I think I'd be a very, very, very sad person if I ever said I got bored with everyday life. I have the richest, most fascinating experience and learning every single minute of every single day and loving every minute of it.
Richard Branson is, perhaps, the most interesting man in the world. You know, for guys like him, anything's obtainable. But for others, there's certain objects that signify you've made it, things that we really, really need. Or maybe we don't need them.
I am a demographic. My car is a gunmetal gray 2007 BMW 328xi, and it's the fanciest thing I have ever bought myself. Like most other actions I undertake, its purchase was accompanied by a sense of terrible shame.
Here's comedian and actor Michael Ian Black. He joined us on this weekend's Marketplace Money.
The first and most obvious reason for my shame was the financial indulgence. How could I possibly justify spending $42,000 on a car when I had not yet saved enough money for my children's college education? I could not. Did that stop me? It did not. The second, deeper level of shame had to do with my own sense of self. I just never envisioned myself being the kind of guy who would drive a car like that, because there is a type of guy who drives an expensive, finely tuned Bavarian automobile. That type of guy is commonly referred to as a douchebag. Compounding my shame is the fact that I already own two perfectly good cars. Yes, they are getting old, but both remain operable. The first is a hulking Jeep Grand Cherokee that we bought before people cared about the earth. The second is my Volkswagen New Beetle, purchased because my wife, Martha, thought it was cute. Originally, the car was hers, but now that we have two kids, it has become mine. I have never felt as defensive about a possession as I do about that Beetle. It's not a girl's car, I tell people. They don't even have to suggest otherwise for me to tell them this. I say it reflexively. Sometimes I say it when giving my order at the McDonald's drive-thru. Can I take your order? It's not a girl's car. But it is a girl's car. Moreover, it is a young girl's car. It is the Justin Bieber of automobiles. It's like driving around in a copy of 17 magazine. When you honk the horn, it squeals. It's simply not an appropriate vehicle for a fully grown, ruggedly handsome man such as myself. I need a sexier car, a man's car. I need a BMW.
Okay, here's another reason you probably like Marketplace so much. It's because we can take serious issues and break them down very simply for our audience. Or as Kai Rizdahl puts it,
so this story has literally everything. Wealth, yes. Money, power, intrigue, corruption. Make it make sense, though. Why does this story matter to us?
Why does the story matter to us? That's so important. And I think we're really good at it here at Marketplace, being simple, straightforward, explaining exactly why things matter. And I think we do it really well when we talk to important people. Last month, Kai went into the Nevada desert to interview President Obama. This week, he flew up to San Francisco to talk with Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner. First, let's have a listen to some of Kai's interview.
In 40 years, plus or minus, when you die, your obituary is going to start with Timothy Geithner, 75th Treasury Secretary of the United States, who held office during the biggest crisis the American economy's faced in three generations. Are you comfortable with your response to the crisis being your legacy?
Well, it was always going to be that case. I mean, when the president asked me to do this, it was a time when the country was burning. The world was on the edge of a second Great Depression, and that was going to be the dominant challenge of our time. And I think the president did the tough, necessary things early with a remarkably effective strategy relative to anything we've seen in recent history, not just in the Great Depression of the United States, but if you look at the management of financial crises in other countries over the last 70, 80 years, I think history will judge the response he put in place alongside the Fed is much, much more effective than we'd seen almost anywhere else. And that is important because nothing would have been possible without that.
What about your legacy, though? That's my legacy, too,
just because, again, my job was to help him put out those financial fires and make sure that we didn't leave the country burning.
And as always on the Remarket podcast, we'd like to give you a little background of our big interviews. So I'm joined by Kai Rizdahl. So what I wanted to ask is just, you know, when you're talking to bigger name people, especially public officials who have to couch every single word they say,
right?
How do you do it? What's your technique?
Well, the trick actually is not to let them get away with stuff. So if you listen to the Geithner interview that we did this week, at one point he said, "I'm reasonably confident that mm-hmm. Europe is strong enough to withstand a shock." And I said, "Mr. Secretary, reasonably confident does not inspire a whole lot of confidence." And it was funny because he physically changed. He leaned forward in his chair. He folded his hands and he said, "Let me say it more strongly. The United States is ready to whatever it is."
Right.
These guys know that when they talk, their actions can move markets. They have huge ramifications and they don't like to mess around. That's why you have to take every opportunity you can to humanize them.
Yes.
So going back to the Geithner interview, you know, I asked him if there was anything – it's been said that he wants to leave at the end of the first term. That's not a secret. And so I said, "Is there anything the president can do to make you stay?" And he took a minute and he smiled and he gave a little which you can hear now, right? But you can't really hear in a whole interview.
Right.
And so I called him on it. I was like, "Hey, you're smiling about this. I mean, you have to humanize these guys because otherwise – it's just a really boring policy interview."
And of course, you did that with the signature.
Oh, right. So, yeah. So, exactly. It's an interesting little fact. I mean, Tim Geithner, when he went to sign the official document that puts his signature on money, that's not the way he signs his name. The Justice Department lawyers and whoever, the money people said, "Listen, you have to make it legible so we could see it."
Describe his normal.
His normal signature, it's a couple of big loops and then some squiggles. And I'll just take his word for it that it says Timothy Geithner. But now, if you look at a $1 bill from 2009 or later, it's got a very careful, clearly like fifth grade penmanship, Timothy F. Geithner, you know, and check our website. It's actually fascinating what he did and why he did it. It's just these guys are – the interesting thing about Tim Geithner, actually, to be honest with you, is that he's a totally normal guy. He came into the room. I introduced myself. We sat down. We chit-chatted for a couple of minutes.
He
was totally mellow.
Uh-huh.
And then we put the microphone in front of his face, and he became Timothy Geithner, Treasury Secretary. And then we were done with the interview. I said, "Mr. Secretary, thank you very much for your time." And he literally leaned back in his chair, and he was like, "So, Kai, I didn't know you were a foreign service officer. I was up in Asia and blah, 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 and this and that." And again, totally normal guy, which kills you because that's the stuff you want to have on the radio, right? That's the Tim Geithner that you want people to hear because you don't get that anywhere else. But, you know, he's got too big a job to be able to mess around like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much.
You bet.
And finally, there are certain items that have been banned from Marketplace, but they're often smuggled into our Los Angeles headquarters via email or internet, or they can unsuspectingly latch onto a reporter's mind. I'm talking here about cliches and overused words. Yeah, I'll let my fellow editors explain.
Let's talk about literally. Most of the time it's used, it's not literally true. It's true or it's kind of true, but it's been used so much that even when it is literally true, it sounds like a cliche.
Perfect storm.
Oil rich.
War torn.
Silver bullet.
Cash cow.
Cash strapped.
The bottom line.
Cliches like only time would tell if, or it remains to be seen if.
Journalists in general have a massive problem with the word massive. They use it too often, and they use it imprecisely.
She is not alone. He is not alone. That transition has become a total journalism cliche. Public radio, television, I see it in print stories sometimes.
So the takeaway point here is don't be a poster child of bad radio and start thinking outside the box, because only time will tell if your audience decides to bite the bullet and tune you out. And that's it for this week's Remarket podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Haas, one of the editors here at Marketplace, and have a great weekend.